We have three wonderful speakers here today. The first is actually a rock star. He's the lead singer in the group The Listening Device, who earlier this year made alongside The Who and UB40. But he also has a parallel life as the Duke of Beaufort. And his memoir, The Unlikely Duke, Memoirs of an Eclectic Life from Rock and Roll to Badminton House, has been very well reviewed, not least in The Oldie, where Mary Killen, our columnist, said, "The enjoyability of the book lies with the Duke's benign and unpretentious attitude to life." I love this rare book. Ladies and gentlemen, Harry Beaufort.
Now, I'm probably one of the few people who lockdown proved to be not such a bad thing. Because at the beginning of 2020, I was preparing yet another year of parties, travelling, and general overindulgence. And then suddenly, I find myself locked down at Badminton, with nothing to do except for sort of weekly statement meetings dealing with COVID-related matters. But I'm sure a lot of people in this room have vaguely felt they've got a book in them. And some of you probably have produced some great works along the way. But I'd always seen that I might sort of be one of those people who never gets round to doing it. And I would have stayed the way, because I'm also have a problem that I'm incredibly lazy and sort of rival the Sleeping Beauty whenever I'm meant to be doing something like work. But free in lockdown, there was nothing else to do. There was no parties, no golf, no band to play. So I started writing this memoir, and it did help the boredom of the lockdown. But trouble was, I can't really claim to have led a particularly distinguished life. But I suppose I can provide insights into what it's like to live in a stately home and manage a large estate, which might be of interest to some people, see the vanishing traditions of the aristocracy. But on the whole, whilst I am involved in sort of vague country pursuits, such as hunting and shooting, I have also sort of ventured into sort of another life, and have sort of friends who are rock stars, actors, politicians, and even royalty. And some of the stories of my book cover that ground. They also cover that I have this endless quest of becoming a rock star myself, but after 40 years we haven't quite made it. But as a rock enthusiast, I have read a number of musicians by autobiographies. There's one that is probably the most critically acclaimed autobiography from somebody not particularly famous, called Viv Albertine, who had a rather unattractive name of The Slits. But had a sort of famous opening line that said, anyone who writes an autobiography is either a twat or broke. And having a big, rather larger than normal house to run, I do have certain financial concerns, but I can't say that I'm broke. So I must be a twat, I suppose. And although I may not yet be sort of headlining at Glastonbury or anything like that, but I actually today find myself on stage with what could be one of the great sort of prog rock supergroups of Beaufort, Beard and Brandreth. I'm rather hoping that they might evolve into Emerson, Lake and Palmer. But anyway, after I had completed this book, I approached editors, publishers and all that sort of stuff. And I was amazed that this very important work was not snapped up immediately. And there was a lot of advice going around. And the main advice that came back time and time again was that I should include more stories about royalty. The trouble was that whilst I have met a few royalty on occasions, they didn't have a sort of huge back catalogue of them. And, for example, the only time I ever went to Royal Ascot, to Windsor Castle to stay there. Absolute disaster. My car broke down about 2 miles away, and I had to charge to the gates of Windsor Castle on a boiling hot day, so literally pouring with sweat, and just ushered rather gently into the castle to change before the smart good stuff began. And I think my book also relates a few encounters with Princess Diana. But perhaps the most portentous one was with Prince Harry, just a topical. And he came to Badminton about 20 years ago for the 18th birthday of my niece. And this was held around a large circular swimming pool that my father had just built. And it was a gathering of rather awkward teenagers, including Harry himself. But and then, you know, and they were just not really sort of comfortable talking with each other. But then suddenly, Harry sort of picked up one of the girls without any explanation and hurled her into the swimming pool. And initially everyone was a bit shocked, but then there was roars of laughter. And perhaps he wasn't particularly unaccustomed with such success from his jokes. He then proceeded to pick up another one, and then another girl, and then another girl. And he was rather like a sort of truck driver, heaving bags of coal onto the back of a lorry before solemnly going back to pick up another one. And but then eventually, so luckily my father's butler was there, so grabbed him by the sort of scruff of the neck and took him away. Because it really was about to wreck the entire castle. And at this point, my brother, who's a great fan of Dallas, the famous American soap opera. And he came up and whispered in my ear, "Harry, we got to be real careful that that boy's elder brother, nothing happens to him." I knew him there. But anyway, I was also told by my prospective publishers that I should include a little bit on what it's like to live in a house the size of Badminton. I was a bit sort of reluctant to do this, as I didn't want to write a guidebook. And so I thought that the best way of dealing with this was to write a little bit about my cousin, with a sort of tenth Duke of Beaufort, who was universally known as Master, like sort of Doctor Who villain, who was a very unusual man in that his total obsession was hunting. And you know, that's what he really did sort of every day. But after the war, he decided to reduce his workload and by seeking a joint master of the hunt, so he only had to work sort of 5 days a week or whatever. And so the word went out in the hunting community. And he got a sort of letter from a certain Major Gundry who was serving in the army in India. And so he sort of looked at it, and all the sort of right ingredients seemed to be there. And so he sort of called an emergency meeting of the Hunt Committee and announced, "Marvellous news, Mahatma Gandhi wants to become master of both hunting." No idea that this rather drastic career change, visionary like that, was going to be on offer. But despite his rather narrow outlook, people were sort of fascinated by his sort of just the sort of day-to-day issues of his life. And one day, my father was shooting somewhere, and a man came up and said, "What does Master have for breakfast?" And my father was a bit surprised by this question, and he said, "Well, you know, probably didn't really know the answer, but he said, I think he has egg, bacon, and sausage." And then, so question answered. And then they shot for a little bit, and then the man came up again and said, "What, he likes a sausage, does he?" And it was sort of fun. Felt the conversation could have gone on literally all day, analysing the breakfast down to the very last detail. So that was. But the thing about Master that he was, well, he loved hunting and he was extremely good at it. And whereas I have a slight obsession of my own that I'm extremely bad at, which is golf. And I do, suddenly looking around the room, I suddenly realize see that golf is a sort of subject that sort of sends instant boredom into the room. But actually, there are occasional stories in my book that are not really about golf, but about how funny sort of things happen on the golf course. But and anyway, when I was really even more obsessed by golf than I was now, in 1997, I went with canvassing for David Cameron. And as you probably, anyone who's done canvassing probably knows, you spend a lot of time sort of hanging about. It's really quite boring. And so I had this very important golf tournament coming up after the election. So I was sort of practicing my swing gently. And suddenly my body suddenly felt sort of live and listen and dumb. So I began moving a little bit more fully. And then suddenly I was doing full-blooded sort of golf swings. But unfortunately with this huge blue rosette on my chest. And so suddenly sort of constituency agent suddenly appeared. Said, look, for God's sake, stop this immediately. And there was a sort of group of sort of, we were on this sort of housing estate. And there was a group of sort of rather unwelcoming yobbos who were sort of guffawing with laughter at my misfortune. But anyway, sort of the political result of all this was that David Cameron didn't get elected that year and had to wait another 4 years. But the other thing I have been advised by sort of publishing things, that what you've got to include in this book is sex, drugs, and rock and roll. And but sex, I think John Betjeman, in his autobiography, wrote that he wished he'd had more. I rather sort of agree with that, but I have nevertheless rather boastfully included one or two of my own encounters on that front. And then as for drugs, I suppose I should have slightly wished that I'd had slightly less over the years, but I still recount that as well. And I have managed to meet and befriend a lot of rock stars who are considerably more successful than myself, and many of whom have actually survived their sex and drugs years with their brains and bodies surprisingly intact. But anyway, what I hope my book does convey is that no matter how supposedly privileged I am, which I am, it is really my family and friends and the people who I've met over the years who bring the colour and humour to my life. And it is them, and not just my very lucky background, that have provided me with the many pleasures that I've enjoyed and are in the book. Thank you.